Thank you for listening to Breadbox Media Podcasts. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app. Change the world.
And welcome to Connect the Dots. I'm your host, Mark Shea. And we are here today on this wonderful Friday afternoon, just before All Saints and All Souls Days coming up next week. And we're here today with Reverend Mr. or Reverend Mr. Deacon or Deacon Reverend Mr. Stephen Gradonis. How you doing, Steve?
I'm doing fine. And you know what? I'm going to be a deacon for a long time. So if you're going to introduce me that way every single show.
Okay. It's so great to be able to use these titles. You know, I don't get a chance to do this too often. So that's cool. What's shaking? How's things?
You know, I find myself oddly at this time of year with Halloween and All Saints Day and All Souls Day looming up around the corner. I find myself thinking of New Year's.
Yeah.
Why, you may ask, am I thinking of New Year's?
Steve, why are you thinking of New Year's?
Well, every family has traditions.
Yes.
And one of the longstanding traditions in my family, which has become part of our New Year's celebration with that very often includes my sister and my mother and her husband. We often get together at New Year's or thereabouts, and we do different things. We play games, and one of the things that we have done for many, many years is we get together and we take turns reading 1 month kind of responsively. We kind of hand it around, and each person reads one of the 12 months in the year in review column that Dave Barry writes every year.
Ah.
So every year Dave Barry writes about all of the things that provides his own ever so slightly satirically adjusted perspective. It's not that far from reality. and he goes through the months, January, February, March. And so each of us will take a turn reading it and passing it around. And it can be very funny. And sometimes you're laughing so hard that you can't finish reading the sentence. And that's always, and I felt like this week we hit peak 2016. Like and this afternoon we hit. And I'm just at this point, I just feel like Dave Barry has to write the best damn year review column of his career. It's up to him.
Well, the thing is that like, it's gonna be so long. it's gonna be more like a year in review book. I mean, just one chapter for each month of all the weirdness, you know.
Well, and I would gladly stay up all night reading it.
Yeah, it's so true.
I saw somebody on Facebook said something this afternoon. They dropped a cliche that you hear all the time: "Damned if you do, damned if you don't." And in my mind, this was expanding. This particular year, it was becoming a speech of Churchillian proportions. I was hearing "damned on the beaches, damned in the fields and in the streets, damned in the hills." You just can't believe.
I know. it's just mind-boggling. Yeah, well, there's a lot of peak weird. What about this afternoon is your peak weird until tomorrow when something even more peak weird happens?
Right. Well, you know, I'd like to say that it was the WikiLeaks revelation that Hillary Clinton considers Doctor Who, and I quote, "boring garbage."
Oh, them's fighting words.
That's it. I think we have to be Team Trump now, don't we?
Okay. That's right, because you know that Trump has never watched Doctor Who and wouldn't know what it is. So, you know, we're safe. I mean, see, that's the thing, Steve. we know what Hillary is made of. You know, Trump is a complete mystery. These things. Well, we have to just close our eyes and lunge. That's what I say. So,
but in seriousness, and I really just don't have anything to say about this, the fact that the words FBI, Clinton, and email are appearing in headlines from respectable news sources this afternoon, that is just peak 2016.
I know.
We still have over a week to go.
It's like this endless running sore. I mean, it's just, you know.
No, and
it's like the staph infection from hell. But yeah, go ahead.
You're looking. I mean, this is what like sifts out of all of the other stuff, you know, all the fake news. You know, Megyn Kelly is a closet Hillary supporter, and when they found out at Fox News, they fired her. And a warehouse worker in Columbus, Ohio, discovered tens of thousands of bogus ballots that were all pre-marked for Clinton, and 3 million Amish gathered in Columbus, Ohio. And
3 million Amish.
And Pope Francis, I forget that the headline about Pope Francis, I think it was that he endorsed Trump too.
He endorsed Trump. This is a true fact. You can find these things out by going on the internet. It contains information.
There was a time when I would have called myself internet optimistic about the access to information and education and so forth. You just, you know, the wealth of human knowledge and understanding at your fingertips.
Yes.
And then I went through the stage where I was like, well, never before has misinformation been so readily available, but also by the same token, never before has it been easier to find out the truth about the misinformation. And In the last few months, I feel like misinformation is winning.
Yeah, it's true. Well, you know, I mean, you can, of course, you can develop a kind of a radar. Yes. If you know what you're doing, it's fairly easy. You know, one of the things you'll notice are like those weird little headlines down at the bottom of lots and lots of pages that will say things like Hollywood bids farewell to, you know, and then I'll have a picture of like, take your pick, George Clooney, you know, it's like he's dead or something.
Right.
And then you just go, you know, and no, he's not dead. And so you get these completely, completely false headlines. These aren't even like somebody misunderstood something. Mm-hmm. This is just, they're just telling you a lie. So you'll click on it and see if that person is actually dead. And then it turns out, no, that person is not dead. But you get this kind of stuff and lots and lots of, you know, fake quotes and all of this stuff. But the thing that is sinister, of course, about this is how much this lying has. There was a terrific speech that Russell Moore, he's a Southern Baptist.
Yes. Yes.
He gave a speech for the 2016 Erasmus lecture. Which is awarded by, it's done by First Things. Anyway, he gave this speech called Can the Religious Right Be Saved? And one of the most disturbing lines in it, and this guy is, I mean, he's an evangelical, he's a serious, well-read, erudite, thoughtful evangelical who is really committed to the gospel as evangelicals understand it, and he's orthodox, as you know, and very serious Christian, and he makes a statement, I'm slightly paraphrasing here, I don't remember the exact words, but it's basically to the effect, he says, the religious right are now the people that the religious right warned you about 20 years ago.
Yes, exactly.
It was a very disturbing analysis, and this is all given. This is basically a lecture that was given to, you know, the doyens of the religious right. at First Things.
I would call it a prophetic speech. I think that I have been so impressed and even more heartened by Russell Moore's leadership coming as he does, you know, not if the things that he said were said by Catholics, they would still be great, but they would be less remarkable. Mm-hmm. But coming from an evangelical and more specifically coming from a Southern Baptist, I think that he is really providing a heroic element of self-critical cross-examination in a culture that is really very sadly lacking it. And he has a lot of great stuff in that speech. And I do recommend, I don't know if the transcript is available anywhere yet. I think First Things probably will publish it eventually.
They'll publish it, I'm sure. Yeah. You can watch the video of it.
Yeah.
It's on YouTube. But the thing that he was saying, and this gets back to what you were pointing out, is he was saying, you know, 20 years ago, Christians compared themselves to, and their moral behavior to biblical standards. Mm-hmm. And he says, by and large, today, what we're doing is we're comparing ourselves to our culture war enemies.
What
if our guy is a sex predator? Their guy is a sex predator, and it's like, that's your standard, you know?
And it is something in a certain way. You can talk about the big picture and what's happened over the last 20 years, and I do think that that's important, especially when you're comparing what was Bill Clinton accused of in the 1990s and what is Donald Trump accused of today. And you know, there have
About this when we return. You're listening to Connecting the Dots. I'm your host, Mark Shea, and we are here today with Deacon Stephen Gradonis, and we will be back on Breadbox Media right after this.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world.
Dots. I'm your host, Mark Shea. We're here on this fine Friday afternoon with Deacon Stephen Gradonis. And we've been talking a little bit just about the year that was. Looking forward to the Dave Barry recap.
Yes.
It's going to be a great one.
on top of everything else, I was thinking of an announcement from NASA that, based on very precise measurements, they had determined that 2016 was going to be 1 second longer than previously thought.
Are you serious?
And people on Twitter were like, that's it!
You know, I blame David Bowie for all of this. I mean, he died, and then everything just went to hell this year.
So many celebrities have died this year.
Yeah. I mean, it was like, yikes, David Bowie's gone, you know, and then Keith Emerson killed himself. And it was like, all these people Alan Rickman, all these people that I listened to, Glenn Frey, what's going on? You know, so David Bowie, I blame him.
Well, we were talking about fake news before the break.
Yeah.
And about my kind of shifting pessimism, how I was once optimistic and then kind of balanced and now. And somebody on Facebook tried to take a more optimistic approach, and they said to me, well, the good news is that we're now forced not to take anything we find in the media at face value. Test everything, retain what is good. And, well, for those of us that are inclined to do that, yes. But the problem is that so many people and good people and Suzanne, my Mrs. Decent Films, has been particularly discouraged about this. People that we like, people that we respect, people that, you know, who we've known for a long time. They've fallen into this trap of, instead of viewing everything critically or viewing everything uncritically, they uncritically dismiss everything that challenges their preferred narratives, but at the same time, they uncritically accept everything that confirms them. And so something right. pops up in their Facebook feed, and it pushes their buttons, and it makes them angry because it tells them what they want to hear about the people that they consider the bad guys. It could be right. Trump, it could be Clinton, and social media empowers them to act on those fight or flight responses that we have to anger. And you can, you know, you are a social media activist by raising awareness when you click the button and share. And they even know in many cases that it might not be true, but it's the kind of thing that they think could be true. It right. sounds true-ish. And so if it's true, then people should know about it. And if it's not true, at least it bashed the right people. And so right. no harm's done.
Right. And it is nothing, you know, when you know, when you've been told this is not true, and you indulge it anyway, there's a tremendous passage. I can't remember the exact wording of it, but there's a tremendous passage from C.S. Lewis in, I think, Mere Christianity, where he says, he's writing during World War II, and he says, suppose you read something terrible about something that the Germans have done, but then some information comes along that says that, well, actually, that didn't happen. Do you feel disappointed by that? Do you feel a desire to hold on to that, to think the worst that you can of your enemies?
The quote.
Okay.
You want it?
Yeah, go ahead.
Suppose one reads a story of filthy atrocities in the paper. Then suppose something turns up suggesting the story might not be quite true or not quite as bad as it was made out. Is one's first feeling, thank God, even they aren't quite so bad as that? Or is it a feeling of disappointment and even a determination to cling to the first story for the sheer pleasure of thinking your enemies are as bad as possible? If it is the second, then it is, I am afraid, the first step in a process which, if followed to the end, will make us into devils. You see, one is beginning to wish that black was a little blacker. If we give it its head later on, we shall wish to see gray as black. And then to see white itself as black. Finally, we shall insist on seeing everything, God and our friends and ourselves included, as black and not be able to stop doing it. We shall be fixed forever in a universe of pure hatred.
Right. And that is what concerns me as I watch the dynamics of this election of, you know, it really does work out, not always, of course, but far more often than is suitable for my comfort. It really does work out that we're seeing people lying for Jesus. We have culture war enemies that we need to defeat. And so I'm going to pass along this story about Hillary murdering somebody.
Or Cardinal one that's been making the rounds from Catholics for Trump. Cardinal Ratzinger forbids Catholics on pain of mortal sin to vote for Clinton.
Right. This is a lie.
It's a lie.
There's no other word for this than that. It's a lie to say that. And when you start lying for Jesus, you are exactly committing yourself to this course of action that Lewis is describing. And it's an incredibly dangerous approach to things because, among other things, it cuts you off from reality. When you start to form the habit of lying...
Which is God.
Right. When you start to form the habit of lying in order to hear what you want to hear and shut out those things that you don't want to hear, you are bound. You might as well just shut your eyes and walk into traffic and hope that, you know, you're not going to get hit by a car because you're closing your eyes to the world as it is. The first virtue that the church
talks to us about is the cardinal virtue of prudence. Prudence means the clear-eyed awareness of what is so. Not what you want things to be, not how you'd like them to be, but how things actually are. And so it is imperative, and this is part of the church's intellectual heritage, it is imperative to pay attention to those voices that you don't want to hear.
Yes.
In the Catholic tradition, it is absolutely imperative to pay attention to those voices because you know what? Sometimes they're right.
Six words that I know you as well as I cite over and over and over on social media and in life. Mm-hmm. Six words that I have found to be among the most liberating thoughts that I have ever had. It just six words that give me such peace and that make me so calm when something comes up that challenges what I thought, that challenges my preconceptions, challenges the way that I look at the world, challenges arguments that I've been making. God does not need my lie.
Exactly.
Exactly right. Widely attributed to St. Augustine. Actually comes from Pope St. Gregory the Great's commentary on the Book of Job.
Really? I didn't know that. I thought it was from Augustine. Okay.
Well, and you are in good company. Jacques Maritain is responsible for that misapprehension. He ascribed it to Augustine and even gave the Latin. It turns out to be, it's not exactly what Gregory's text of Job says, and it's not exactly what Gregory said, but it's kind of in between the two. Mm-hmm. Like I think that in the line in Job is, does God need your lie? And then Pope St. Gregory said, God does not need a lie. But if you put the two of them together, you get, God does not need my lie.
Right. Okay. I can go with that. I think there's a lot of quotes out there that are sort of, well, if he didn't say it, he would have if he'd thought of it, you know. There's a lot of stuff that gets attributed to Chesterton like that, I think.
Yes, yes.
It sounds Chestertonian, and he probably would have said it.
This one actually does go back to the patristic era, and it really is a saint, and it really is of the highest level of authority. So it's a great quote, and, you know, if people misascribe it to Augustine, there are worse things.
Okay, yeah, that's true. There's another quote I was thinking of. I can't remember it now, but... it really worries me that, we have embraced in our political conversation, everybody on left and right does this practically, you know, we have embraced the notion of the genetic fallacy, that something is true or false according to who said it. And it is a fallacy. If Hitler says 2 + 2 = 4, it's true. It doesn't matter that Hitler said it, you know? And so, sure, we always have and we always will navigate by the general trustworthiness of a person. So the thing is very rarely are we going to be going to Hitler to ask about whether 2 + 2 = 4. And when Hitler does say things about other stuff, you're smart to doubt it. Particularly when it's in his interest. But, in our political discourse, it's so important not to just do this craziness of wishing your, culture war opponents away like this. It just leads to catastrophe. And in our case, it led us to Donald Trump, which was a huge mistake. We will be back right after this. You're listening to Connecting the Dots. I'm your host, Mark Shea. We'll be back on Breadbox Media right after this.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world.
Connecting the Dots. I'm your host, Mark Shea. And we are here with the dynamic Reverend Mr. Stephen Gerdanis. Steve, of course, is the owner and proprietor of DecentFilms.com. He's a film critic for Crux News, for National Catholic Register. He writes for Catholic Digest. And what's happening in the Bijou these days?
Well, we have a very exciting weekend coming up, not this weekend, but next weekend.
Yeah.
Yes, we have two. Well, this week, I had a chance to see two films that are both opening a week from today. And we will be talking about the other film next week. They are both going to be blockbusters. And they are both from directors who are Christians. And they both deal in very different ways with faith issues.
Okay.
One of them is by a bad Catholic. And that is Mel Gibson, whose movie Hacksaw Ridge we'll be talking about next week.
Uh-huh.
And the other one is by a good Protestant, and that is Scott Derrickson. And we will be talking some about not Doctor Who, boring garbage according to Hillary Clinton, but another pop culture doctor, Doctor Strange.
Doctor Strange. All right. Fantastic.
The latest Marvel superhero character to hit the big screen.
All right.
And there are a lot of reasons to be excited about this movie. One of them is that I know how much you love talking about superhero movies.
I do. I love it so much. You can probably hear it in the tone of my voice. Go ahead.
But there are many others. And one of them is that Benedict Cumberbatch is a very talented actor. And he is just absolutely perfectly cast in this part.
No kidding. He looks like Doctor Strange perfectly.
Well, he looks like him, but okay. A lot of people are saying, you know, Doctor Strange, he's a Tony Stark ripoff. He even has the goatee, the arrogance, and everything. Well, like, okay, but in the comics, Doctor Strange had those things first. Like, Tony's character changed to become more like the character that we know today. But this is who Doctor Strange was, this arrogant, supercilious brain surgeon. He was the best. He was the only one who could do the kinds of surgeries that he did. And then he had a terrible accident and he had suffered nervous damage in his hands and he couldn't operate anymore. He goes to Tibet and he studies magic and he becomes the master of the mystic arts and a magical defender of Earth in the Marvel comics. And dang, Benedict Cumberbatch is exactly right for that part. And Scott Derrickson, Marvel really gave him, you know, the keys to the kingdom here. This is Marvel's first origin story in a long time, other than Ant-Man. And they really have, they've put a lot of money into it. And Derrickson has created what is, I think, first of all, definitely the best origin story since Iron Man, and maybe in the whole Marvel Cinematic Universe, and the most visually original, certainly, film of any of them. It's such a trip to watch. And I would not say this of most superhero movies, but you need to see Doctor Strange in the theater. You need to see it in 3D. You need to see it. And if you can see it in IMAX, by all means, do that as well.
I'm looking forward to it. I am looking forward to it. I do confess it.
Okay.
So there we go. All right.
You sure you don't want to talk about hedgehogs?
Well, you know, I was going to say, Doctor Strange still has nothing on adorable hedgehogs eating little tiny cakes and things like that for super duper truth, you know. And power and goodness and justice and all the rest of it. That's all there is to it. And I'm right and you're wrong if you disagree with me. So there you
go. But when it comes to superhero movies, many of them have trafficked in religious imagery and themes, comparing superheroes to gods and so forth.
Right.
But first of all, because Doctor Strange deals with magic already, you know, it's in an area of greater interest to us as Christians, potentially for reasons of concern, because, of course, you know, magic and the occult is contrary to the first commandment. But then you also have the fact that Derrickson is injecting these themes when Dr. Strange, that's his real name, by the way, Stephen Strange.
Okay.
When he arrives in Kathmandu, he is a convinced materialist. He doesn't believe in spirit. He doesn't believe in magic. He doesn't believe in anything mystical or supernatural. Right. And his mentor, the Ancient One, who is played in a very iconoclastic bit of casting by Tilda Swinton.
Okay. How ancient is she supposed to be?
Well, she's actually really ancient because she's this is another interesting thing that the movie does. I'm not going to get into how. It is important to the movie's moral themes, but she has magically extended her life. So she really is quite ancient.
Okay.
And you know, you shave Tilda Swinton's head and I mean, forget about how old she is. She doesn't have to be any particular sex. She doesn't even have to be human. I mean, she looks like she could have come from another planet, another dimension, anything you want.
Okay.
So, so she shows him that the world is larger and more mysterious than his scientific materialism will allow. And that, I think, is very interesting.
Okay, interesting. I'm looking forward to this. I think it's going to be good. I'll go see anything with Benedict Cumberbatch in it. You know, the weird thing is the first time I ever saw Benedict Cumberbatch was in Amazing Grace, which is not at all what you think of when you think of a Benedict Cumberbatch film. he's just so good. He's just such a good actor, and he was great in that film too.
Okay.
All right. I'm looking forward to that. You know, we've also got. Oh, go ahead.
Oh, well, I was just going to go on and talk a little bit more about the.
Tell me more.
Well, okay. So, you know, we've talked before on this show about magic and religious concerns and so forth. And I've been kind of toying about writing an article of the various hierarchies of areas of religious concern with regard to fantasy and superheroes and escapism and so forth. And, you know, because this is something I've been thinking about ever since I was a kid reading comic books. And there were always certain superheroes that my parents had concerns about, you know, like I grew up watching Batman and Superman on television, the old Adam West Batman and the George Reeves Superman, and that was no problem. But then on Saturday mornings, there was the Shazam Isis Hour. And so Shazam on the surface, he seemed like any other superhero. He was a young boy, Billy Batson, and he says a magic word and he transforms into this powerful superhero. But it turns out that his magic word Shazam is an acronym for various beings of legend and myth. And the S is for Solomon, the wisdom of Solomon. So that's biblical. But then you've got the strength of Hercules, the stamina of Atlas, the power of Zeus, the courage of Achilles, and the speed of Mercury. So you're starting to get into the realm of polytheism.
Okay.
And then you get, and that was one thing, but in the second half of the Shazam Isis Hour, you have a superhero who's a woman who says an invocation to Isis, oh mighty Isis, and she transforms into a mortal instantiation of Isis, the goddess Isis. And my parents wouldn't let me watch that. And, you know, I'm not going to second guess them. I'm not going to, you know, say, but it, their scruples about that instilled in me the idea that we have to bring what we believe to bear in a thoughtful way on our entertainment choices.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's something, it's one of those things that we see this every time some new cultural phenomenon happens. And a lot of times there's not a lot there. Like Shazam, for example, you know. Mm-hmm. But, other times there are things that you need to pay attention to, of course.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing is that so much of this stuff gets dialed up to 11 in all of our discourse. So,
yes.
You know, something
especially
happens.
Especially the more popular a property is, the more alarmed people get.
Right. You know, I mean, we saw this in spades with Harry Potter.
Yes.
you know, just these massive panics about Harry Potter. And it was, it's like, you know, all the things there are, as there always are with any story or book practically, you know, there's sure there are some problematic elements here and there, but no, Harry Potter was not an occult conspiracy. It just isn't.
No, it isn't.
And in fact, you know, if it's up to me, if you ask me, you know, I would recommend the Harry Potter books unequivocally to parents who want to help in giving their kids, you know, healthy models of heroic characters, you know, who are, you know, sure, at the same time, they're flawed. But that's kind of the thing about characters in stories. They're supposed to be flawed. But, you know, the idea of treating this as, you know, the witches are tunneling under your house to, you know, draw your children down into hell. That happens so often, and it drives me nuts because it impoverishes, I think, you know, our encounters with the culture. You're listening to Connecting the Dots. I'm your host, Mark Shea. We're here today with Deacon Stephen Gradonis. We'll be talking a bit more about life at the Bijou when we return right after this on Redbox Media.
If you enjoy listening to Mark Shea and all of his wonderful co-hosts here on Connecting the Dots, then consider becoming a friend of the show and provide your support today. Go to breadboxmedia.com and click on Friend of the Show. Thank you.
Welcome back to Connecting the Dots. I'm your host, Mark Shea, and we are here today with Deacon Stephen Gradonis. We're talking about... we've been talking about Doctor Strange a little bit, but also the, how would you put it, the uses of magic, particularly in fantasy literature, and the real but don't get crazy worries that some Christian parents have about this. It's funny because, of course, I mean, gee whiz, you know, magic and all of that sort of thing has been part of fantasy literature, you know, back to Greek stories, you know. Gee whiz, you've even got, you know, somebody doing a seance in the Old Testament, you know. And there are all kinds of different portrayals of magic, you know. But I'm sorry, you go.
Well, you know, and it's not just magic. Magic is somewhere on a spectrum of themes that you encounter in fantasy. And for me, my earliest thinking through a lot of these issues was in connection with comic books. Let's talk about comic books some more, Mark.
Yes, that's such a great idea. I'm so glad you're going there.
you know, so a lot of superheroes are... they exist in a realm of fantasy or escapist fiction that's very unproblematic. It either doesn't have fantastic elements or they're sci-fi based. You have characters like Superman, Green Lantern, Aquaman, Spider-Man, the Fantastic Four, the X-Men. Nothing so much to worry about there. Then you have ones that begin to verge into quasi-religious territory. And some of them, like Captain Marvel and Shazam, it's a very tangential connection. Another example would be Wonder Woman. If you go back to her origin story, it turns out that she was created out of clay by Zeus. Okay, but polytheism is not really part of the warp and woof of Wonder Woman comic books or the TV show or so forth. It's not something that you need to worry about a lot. But then, you know, with a character like Isis in the Shazam Isis Hour, it starts to get a little bit more pronounced. And then you have the characters for whom magic or the occult and potentially demonic adversaries are part of the regular fabric of the story. And that includes characters like Doctor Strange in Marvel and the DC counterpart, Doctor Fate. Then you have characters who embody, and I think that it's slightly more problematic when you're talking about witches rather than sorcerers. Because, and this is kind of an imaginative thing, but it's also a historical thing. Sorcerers for us exist more in a realm of imagination, but witches tie us to the language of the Bible and the language of Christian history. You know, you have the Salem witch trials and medieval witch hangings and burnings and so forth. And so that raises a different level of concerns. And then you have characters who are actually described as, or who appear to be, demons. And these may be villains, like in the Marvel universe, Doctor Strange often fights a character, and he appears in this movie briefly. His name is Dormammu, and he's basically a demon.
Okay.
At least in the comic books. Now, in the movies, they're taking a little bit of a different route. But then you also have characters like Hellboy and Ghost Rider and the demon. That's the character's actual name in the DC comics. He's the demon, and he is a demon. Mm-hmm. And these characters can be presented in different ways. Sometimes they can be heroes or they can be villains. Like Ghost Rider. Ghost Rider is a devil from hell, but he's revealed to be the spirit of vengeance. And another demon binds him to the soul of a mortal human being, Johnny Blaze. And so when he wreaks
I'm sorry.
Doctor Strange, Doctor Stephen Strange, Johnny Blaze.
Okay, go ahead.
There's a force, I think, in the Marvel universe that causes preternatural things to happen to characters with unusually appropriate or ironic names. There's sometimes I suspect that there's something similar in the real world. You know, you got somebody like Usain Bolt who runs around as fast as he does, and Anthony Weiner.
You know, you're right. That is like a total Marvel Comics villain name. But,
good. He goes. The Ghost Rider goes around terrifying people and burning them with his hellfire, but he can only harm bad people. And, you know, I collected these comics when I was a kid, but I was always really conflicted about them. And I have all the comics that I've ever bought in boxes out in the garage, and Suzanne really wants to sell them, and I'm very open to selling them. But you know what? I don't think I'm going to sell the Ghost Rider ones. I think I'm going to throw them away.
Okay.
And that's my personal scruple, and I would argue against the imaginative enjoyment of characters of this kind. I wouldn't, you know, I'm not going to condemn somebody to hell for having a different opinion. But in my opinion, there's a line here that is better not crossed. So, so these are the kinds of questions. So when it comes to somebody like Doctor Strange, what do we as Catholics make of Doctor Strange? Well, in the movies, he does have magic, but it's portrayed as a kind of interdimensional energy thing. It can be explained in scientific terms if you want to explain it in scientific terms. There's no spirituality to it. And that, for me, puts it kind of in the Harry Potter realm of magic as science. If there's no spirituality, there's no invocations, you're not summoning spirits, unless you're a bad guy. The bad guy's magic does look more occult, and you are trafficking with other spirits. And so that's interesting to me. But then you have something that's revealed about a character. I don't want to give it away, but I'm going to talk more about this in my review. A character who does something that can be considered a compromise of their beliefs or of the principles that they're supposed to live by. And the movie is genuinely ambiguous as to whether this is a reasonable accommodation for the sake of the greater good. Sometimes you have to bend the rules in order to accomplish something worthwhile. Or was this character only fooling themselves and wound up causing more harm than the good that they did? And How you answer that question to me, I think, is the question on which the real moral message of Doctor Strange movie turns.
Okay, interesting. Well, I, as I say, I'm looking forward to it, so I will go and see it next week. I'm also looking forward to Arrival, but we will discuss that when it arrives. Yes. So that that just looks a really interesting movie to me.
It does.
And yeah, well, you know, and I'm glad they gave Scott Derrickson the helm on this movie. He's made some interesting films in the past, and I'm happy to see that. You often hear these complaints that somehow or other, you know, Christians are blackballed in Hollywood, but I don't believe that. I think if you've got the chops to make a good movie, they don't care, you know, where you go to church on Sunday. They want to see if you can you make a good movie. Jeffrey Overstreet wrote me one time. And there was sort of the opposite question that arose. There was some movie that was made a while back about Elizabeth Elliot's brother, who was he was
Thomas Howard or a different brother?
No, it was killed in
that,
Ecuador.
That brother, okay.
Yeah, Jim.
Thomas Howard is yeah.
But Jim Elliot.
Yes.
Jim Elliot. They made a film about Jim Elliot a few years back, and it turned out that the guy that they'd cast to play Jim Elliot was gay.
Oh, huh.
And so there's like this, you know, is it appropriate to have this guy playing Jim Elliot? There was all these discussions about this. And so Jeffrey Overstreet wrote me and said, what do you think about this controversy? And my response was, can he act? You know, yeah. Well, okay. Does he kind of look like Jim Elliot? Yeah. Probably sounds like a good acting choice then.
Well, there was this, that you know? Sounds an awful lot like some of the discussion that cropped up around Chariots of Fire.
Yeah, right. Same thing. You know,
they're also, the Christian protagonist in Chariots of Fire, was played by an actor, who was gay. But he honored the character and he embodied his Christian virtue and his Christian conviction. And that's why they call it acting.
Right. Yeah. And so it was, you know, the thing is that, you know, so much what enters into the question, you know, are there political struggles in Hollywood? Well, duh, you know, but the thing is, at the end of the day, if you can make a good movie, your chances are much higher that they're gonna hire you to do it than if you're a noble person who can't make a movie good. So I'm happy to see that Derrickson, you know, has been cast to do this, or was picked to do this, and has done a good job. I think it's gonna be fun. So more Derricksons. You know, that's what we need. So what else? We're out of time, aren't we? Well, I want to thank you so much for being on the show today, Steve. You've been listening to Connecting the Dots. I'm your host, Mark Shea. Our producer today was Danny Head. And we will be back on Monday with Sherry Antonetti and Halloween. And we'll be having a good weekend until then. I hope you do, too. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to Breadbox Media Podcasts. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world.